Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for joining me to listen in. Turning out to be a beautiful day, which is great because Art Walk is happening this evening at 5 p.m. Come on down to downtown Ames and be sure to stop by the KHOI Doodle Cafe, where there's going to be food, music, flowers, art, jewelry, lots and lots of fun. So I went to Central Campus. I really enjoy reading books on Central Campus during the summer with the beautiful campanile and beautiful trees. And there was this raccoon, and he was walking on the sidewalk like he was an ISU student. And he kind of walked past me. Raccoons always kind of look like they're giving you dirty looks. I think it's because of the mask. And on my driveway the other night, I was going out to the car, and there was a raccoon on the driveway. And he started walking towards me. He kind of walked maybe about 4 or 5 feet away from me, and then he kind of went into the bushes. But I'm just seeing a lot of raccoons. Somebody yesterday said to me, maybe it has to do with all the water. It did occur to me, this is a purely layperson's analysis, it's possible that there's a lot more water in the sewers and that the raccoons don't have as many places to live where they usually live, and maybe they're coming up above ground more than usual. So anyway, that's my theory. I don't know if it's true. The other day on the road, I saw a dead chipmunk. I've never seen a chipmunk roadkill before, and it really gave me pause. The last thing about the wild ones is, have you noticed how many mosquitoes already are out? So let's face it, guys, there's a lot of water out there. We are in for a wild time with the mosquitoes this summer. That's my report from the wild ones. Here is Mr. Dennis Hart with a roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
It's good to be back here in this seat on this first Friday in June. Let's start by looking back at what made news last Saturday. And what made very big news indeed was the decision by the Iowa Supreme Court that rejected an appeal by landowners and an environmental group who wanted to review the use of eminent domain to build the Dakota Access oil pipeline across the state. The court said the use of eminent domain for the pipeline was not unconstitutional. The pipeline passes through 18 counties in Iowa, including Boone and Story counties. Following the release of the High Court's decision, Boone County landowner Laverne Johnson released a statement saying he was devastated by the decision and asked, "How can a Texas company be allowed to seize my family farmland for their profit?" On Saturday, there was news that former Nevada Mayor Lynn Lathrop had entered his name into consideration for the vacant Story County Board of Supervisors seat. Lathrop served as Nevada's mayor from 2013 to 2017. He became mayor after a 44-year career in the food industry. During his tenure in Nevada, he oversaw a task force that worked on improvements along U.S. Highway 30 and the early development of a widening project at Airport Road and the Lincoln Highway. He is a Republican. He and 8-term Democratic State Representative Lisa Heddens were the two candidates as of last Saturday who had announced they were seeking appointment to fill the seat vacated by Supervisors member Rick Sanders. A committee hopes to appoint and swear in a new supervisor at the June 18th Supervisors meeting. Last Saturday also brought word that the City of Ames' public bus system, SciRide, had applied for a grant that would help it acquire 2 battery electric buses by the year 2023. The Low or No Admission Grant Program is a highly competitive federal process. Transit agencies all across the nation compete for the same pool of federal money. SciRide applied for just over $1.5 million in grant money. It would require a local match of about $445,000. Battery-powered electric buses use battery packs to run an electric motor to turn the wheels. The batteries are recharged by plug-in chargers that use electricity. One more note from Saturday, the United Way of Story County raised enough money during its recent donation drive to provide more than 60,000 pounds of food to local pantries. More than 12,000 pounds of food and supplies were collected, along with more than $8,400 in monetary donation. Sunday brought word of another presidential campaign visit to Ames. Democratic hopeful Tim Ryan, a congressman from Ohio, told a crowd at the Ames Library on Saturday that he's planning to run against President Trump on economic issues. He said the economy is not doing well, that Trump and the Republican Party are what he called economically illiterate, and he blamed them for creating what he termed a broken economic system. Ryan said he wants to reestablish the ideals of former President Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal in order to restore what Ryan called the eroded middle class. Also Sunday, word that former Ames High School basketball standout and current NBA player Harrison Barnes came back to Ames on Saturday to help promote reading. He and his wife, Brittany, gave a $53,000 donation to the library and to the Raising Readers of Story County program. He said reading is important to him because he spent many of his childhood days going to the Ames Library. There was more last Sunday, including a report about the 9th annual Summerfest celebration that took place in Campustown on Saturday. The event kicked off at 3 on Welch Avenue, and family-friendly activities were available until 6, such things as face painting, balloon twisting, a root beer garden, a petting zoo, and more. Live music was provided until 9. A highlight of the event was the Cutest Dog Contest. More than 40 dogs took part in 4 categories. The winners were Winston, a golden retriever in the puppy category, Snickers, a rat terrier in the small dog category, Rosie, a corgi in the medium dog category, and Zizi, a golden retriever in the big dog category. There was also a report that a red-tailed hawk was released on Saturday at Ada Hayden Park during a gathering to unveil new interpretive signs at the park. Mayor John Haley was there to talk about the new signs, and he helped launch the hawk back into the wild. The hawk had been found starving in Polk County in March and had been nursed back to health. One more note from Sunday, a preview of an event set to take place later that day. It was the unveiling of 2 new ping-pong tables at Roosevelt Park in Ames. They were donated by Ames resident Steve Fisher. Tuesday brought word about Monday's groundbreaking ceremony that marked the beginning of Phase 1 of construction of the new Ames High School. The first of the 5 phases consists of site work, south building construction, and parking lot construction. Phase 1 is set to end next June. Ames School Board President Elisa Franzen said, in her words, "This is truly a wonderful opportunity for our school district to be celebrating this." Funding for the project is projected at about $137 million, with the high school part estimated at $121.5 million and a swimming pool project estimated at a bit more than $15 million. Ames voters approved a $110 million bond issue for the school project, with pool construction funded separately. Tuesday also brought word that Deb Shildroth had been named the new assistant city manager in Ames. Shildroth had been part of a nationwide search to fill the vacant position. She was among more than 70 applicants. She is currently the Story County Director of External Operations and County Services, and she will assume her new role July 1st. Tuesday also brought word that the Boone County Trails Initiative was awarded a $100,000 grant from the Central Iowa Regional Transportation Planning Alliance. The money will go toward building the first segment of the High Trestle Trail to Boone alignment, which runs 1.5 miles from the trail to Swede Point Park. Also Tuesday, a report that students and staff at Ballard East Elementary School held a ceremony to bury a new time capsule on the school's playground. The old time capsule had been buried in 1993, when that playground was dedicated. The new capsule included a map of the current school, an M&M wrapper, and a Pepsi can, 2 popular books, Harry Potter and Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and more. And politics made front page news on Tuesday with a preview story that Democratic presidential hopefuls Kirsten Gillibrand and Cory Booker are scheduled to visit Ames tomorrow, Saturday, as part of the Democrats' Big Tent on the Prairie summer fundraiser. This will be Booker's 3rd visit to Ames and the 4th for Gillibrand. Wednesday brought word that another Democratic presidential hopeful would also be showing up Saturday as part of Story County Democrats' Big Tent on the Prairie fundraiser. He is New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. It will be his first stop in Ames since he announced he was running for president last month. Meanwhile, yet another Democratic hopeful, Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, will be in Boone tonight, Friday, for a campaign stop. He will be at the Livery Deli on 7th Street starting at 6 o'clock. Also Wednesday, a report that plans are in the works to build a coffee shop with a drive-thru at the corner of Lincoln Way and Duff Avenues in Ames. Part of that site used to be where the Hanson Sinclair service station operated. That station closed in March, and a property behind the gas station was torn down earlier this week. Plans for the new development include combining the former gas station and the 2 properties immediately behind it into 1 parcel. Wednesday also brought word about this past week's meeting of the Ames School Board. Among other things, the board approved a 1-year contract with Chartwell School Dining Service for the district's food service needs this coming school year. The board also set a public hearing for the sale of the old Edwards Elementary School property for 6:30 p.m. on June 17th. There was also a story Wednesday about Tuesday's Story County Board of Supervisors meeting. The board approved a funding request for $19,000 to add slip-resistant stair tread covers to their 3 staircases in the Story County Administration Building. This after 6 reported falls on the staircases this year. And board members Linda Merkin and Loris Olson expressed their gratitude to Deb Shildroth, who is resigning as the county's Director of External Operation to become the Assistant City Manager in Ames. Shildroth will leave the county's employment on June 28th and assume the Assistant City Manager position on July 1st. And one more note from Wednesday, a preview story about what was scheduled to take place last night. Ames American Legion Post 37 planned to host a celebration at its Main Street site to commemorate its 100 years of providing services to the community. Thursday, yesterday, brought word that the Iowa Court of Appeals had rejected the appeal of a man convicted in the 2013 death of a man in West Ames. The court rejected the appeal filed by Lee LaPon, who had been sentenced to 50 years in prison for the killing of 38-year-old Devlin Lockman. There was also word yesterday that a rural Madrid man had been charged with animal neglect after authorities found what they called a horrendous scene. Nearly 200 cats were found dead in the home of 65-year-old Dennis Carlson, and about 100 were found alive. Also yesterday, a preview of the State League of Women's Voters Convention that will be held today and tomorrow at the Iowa State University Alumni Center. The event will celebrate the 100th anniversary of women having the right to vote. And one more note from yesterday, a look at tonight's Art Walk that will take place starting at 5 o'clock in downtown Ames. The event will include more than 60 community artists and feature work from painters, jewelry makers, photographers, woodworkers, potters, sculptors, musicians, and more. KHOI Radio will be taking part, so drop by our studio here at 410 Douglas to see what we have going on. And there you have it, your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, taking the weekend off now, but making plans to return right here on Monday with a look at what made news around Iowa. In the meantime, enjoy Art Walk and have a great weekend.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there, touch your hair and walk with me. All summer long we sang a song, then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind. Like painted kites, those days and nights went flying by. The world was new beneath the blue umbrella sky. Then softer than a piper man, one day it called to you. I lost you to the summer wind. The autumn wind and the winter wind, they have come and gone. But still the days, those lonely days, go on and on. But guess who sighs his lullabies through night.
Summer Wind by Michael Bublé. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for listening in. And thank you, Mr. Hart, for the rundown of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. Iowa State University can boast a recent award-winning documentary production. A film made here recently won two prestigious awards. The documentary is called Seeds, Diversity of Wonder. Dr. Manjeet Misra is the director of the Seed Science Center at Iowa State University. He is the executive producer of the film. He's here together with Cindy Hicks, who is in charge of communications and marketing for the Seed Science Center at Iowa State. Thank you so much for coming in. The award-winning video will be screening next week. Cindy, why don't you tell us, where is the film screening?
So it will be at Ryman Gardens on Father's Day, 6 p.m., a great opportunity for you to bring Dad out and enjoy a free screening. We'll have some refreshments. The film itself is about an hour long, and then there will be a discussion afterwards. It's a very appropriate film for all ages, little kids all the way up to grandma and grandpa.
Dr. Misra, would you please describe the movie?
First, thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for coming.
We have been in Ames community for about 40 years.
40 years.
My family. It's a vibrant and warm and friendly community, so we decided to stay here. So it is truly a privilege to be in this local talk.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
About the movie, Seeds has been my passion. I find them so beautiful. It is said that all the flowers of tomorrow are in the seeds of today. I like to build on that and say that all the foods of tomorrow are in the seeds of today.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we will have 9 billion people by 2050. We have to feed nutritiously. Particularly, what is important is for the mothers and the children. So we just think that seed is the solution to this big problem. I like to think of the big picture. Seeds are the future. I think in this tiny seed, there is the potential to feed the world, to heal the world, to clothe the world. You know, we are surrounded by seeds. Every day when we get up in the morning, the cup of coffee comes from seeds. The bagel that we eat comes from seeds. The clothes that we wear, the energy also comes from crops, which comes from seeds. So seed is the future. It's actually, Ursula, is the beginning and the future. Beginning and renewal.
It's also the end result, too, of a plant,
exactly.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a cycle of life. In this tiny seed, it carries the splendor and cycle of life. So it's a miracle of nature.
Are you passionate about seeds?
What I also want to mention, it's not only a miracle of nature, it's also a product of science. Certainly, the nature has designed seeds in many, many beautiful ways. But what the scientists are doing is to build on that and to improve the seed. And allow me to say this, 80% of the farmers in the world do not have access to quality seed. See, that's why we wanted to do this movie, so that we will reach a very wider audience. See,
who is your audience in this movie?
Yeah, good question. I think our audience are the young people. We are concerned that young people are not choosing agriculture as their profession. You know, there is always the temptation of going to the information technology, to the medical technology, which are good. You know, we don't have anything against that. But also we need very good thinkers to agriculture, because agriculture is the foundation of civilization. So just like we are saying seed is the beginning and end, it's agriculture that really started a lot of this civilization, where the hunters, gatherers kind of living came to end, and we could actually grow crops. That began the civilization. So seed is the beginning of all life, all civilization. So that's very exciting.
So tell us a little bit about what is in the movie, what people will see.
Yeah, we wanted to do a different kind of movie, not with a bombastic scientific jargons, but in a plain, beautiful language that will attract the young people, that will be very much appreciated by the public, the role and the value of seeds. So I think it has 6 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Each episode is about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me tell you, one episode is called A Day Without Seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can relate to the value. And there are beautiful, beautiful pictures. And, you know, the seeds are, they come in all sizes, shapes, texture, luster, and I find them extremely beautiful. You have a tiny, tiny seed, but you also have a double coconut, which can travel thousands and thousands of miles. You know, seeds travel.
So a double coconut is a big seed.
It's a big seed.
But it's Cindy's showing us how big.
Yeah.
But it's still a seed.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And they just travel in wind, in water, on the backs of people and animals. You know, it's in this movie, we have captured that in a very different way. For example, you see a little kid blowing dandelion. And what the kid is doing in the process is actually dispersing the seeds.
That's right.
So we have captured that kind of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think this will be an enjoyable evening.
Tell us what some of the other sections are.
Oh, that's right.
In the movie.
Yeah, I think there is another episode where we talk about how we are storing seeds all over the world. It's called the seed banks. Everybody has heard of the Norway, the vault, where the seeds are stored.
That's right.
But there are also other places where the seeds are stored. And in fact, Ames is one of those centers of excellence.
The Seed Science Center.
It's not the Seed Science Center. We work very closely with them, but it's on State Avenue called the Plant Introduction Station. Then in Colorado, they have a National Seed Storage Laboratory. So we have an episode on that. But one other episode that everybody would enjoy is the Iowa farm boy, Dr. Norman Borlaug. You know, Dr. Borlaug is said to have fed 1 billion people because of his work, because of his different kinds of work in developing varieties.
And where is he?
He has passed away, but you know, his legacy continues through the World Food Prize, which is held in each October. So we have an episode we call the Seed Pioneers, the heroes and heroines of the seed science and industry. So that's another episode, so on.
So I would like you to describe a little bit the Seed Science Center. But before you do that, Cindy, I'd like you to brag on Dr. Misra a little bit and tell us about the award that the film received.
Well, this film is a really just beautiful film. People will be amazed by it. It debuted in March. At the Environmental Film Festival, it was chosen for Washington, D.C. It played to a sold-out crowd, which to us was just amazing. But then last week, we were notified that it had won 2 Telly Awards. The Telly Award is the biggest honor you can receive for videos that play on all screens, TV, movie theater. Some of the other winners include CNN, Netflix, CBS. There were over 12,000 entries from all 50 states and 5 continents. So that tells you...
Give that number again.
Over 12,000 entries from all 50 states and 5 continents.
12,000 entries from 50 states and 5 continents.
So
continents, and this film won.
Yes, Dr. Misra's film won a Silver Telly Award for the entire film, all 6 segments. But then one segment, A Day Without Seeds, also won a bronze award on its own. So that's a pretty big honor for this film, for Dr. Misra, for the production company, Pierce Mill Media, and for the Seed Science Center.
That's beautiful. That's it. Congratulations, Dr. Misra.
Oh, thank you. And I think it's the faculty and staff at the Seed Science Center and at Iowa State University, who we work as a collaborative team, you know, helping each other and so on. So that's where the credit goes to.
So tell us first why you even decided to make such a movie, and then tell us a little bit about the Seed Science Center.
Sure. The reason we wanted to make this movie is twofold. One is I had a very good friend, David Lambert, who was in our Seed Science Advisory Council. He was a hunger fighter. And, you know, many times he was a communicator par excellence. And he always told me, Manjeet, such good work is going on at the Seed Science Center. You need to communicate that to a wider audience. And then I saw a movie at the Science Center. You know, my family, we were at the Science Center, and this was about a flood that just simply decimated the vegetation. But there was one little plant that survived, and that brought back the vegetation, you know, which was very beautiful to me, the revitalization and so on. So I said, well, this is the kind of impetus to do a movie on seeds. But to come back to the Seed Science Center is a global center of excellence. We work on not only seed technology, but we also work on seed systems. And by seed system, I mean how a country produces, distributes, markets seeds. So we have worked in 80 countries in the last 25 years. And we are very proud of this helpfulness.
Do you develop new seeds, or what?
Yeah.
What is the research?
That is a very good point. We do not develop new seeds. We actually, our Seed Science Center work begins where the plant breeder who develops the new seeds. What we do is the seeds are different than crops. How do you produce seeds that will be very highly vigorous? How do you store seeds so that they will not lose quality? How do you handle seeds so that they will not be damaged? You know, seeds are like people. You know, if you just simply drop them from maybe 5 or 6 feet height, their embryo gets damaged. And when that embryo gets damaged, it's not going to germinate. So the difference between seed and crop is that the seed must reproduce. So that science and technology is what we do at the Seed Science Center. Then how do you market seeds? How do you finance? How do you do the industry development? You know, that public and private sector collaboration, this is where we are focused on.
So do you actually have seeds at the Seed Center? And do you actually send them around the world? Or do you more distribute information about how to do it?
That's a very good question. Thank you, Ursula. I think we operate the world's largest public seed testing laboratory. We test approximately about 300 different types of seeds.
And where do they come from?
They come from the industry that wants to make sure that the seeds are pure. That
so seed vigorous. Companies?
Seed companies, mm-hmm. farmers from other countries, from many different lots and lots of clientele.
So you have, for instance, you have farmers in some other country sending you their seeds and asking you to test them for how well they'll perform?
That is happening, but in an indirect way. See, mm-hmm. they will have to send it to the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
And U.S. government will ask us to test seeds. But there are not just our seed laboratory. There are many seed laboratories. The reputation we have is that we are the authoritative source for all laboratories. You know, whenever there is a question. The other thing that has happened is we test seeds for disease. See, seeds is global in nature. They get sent to many different countries. So you want to make sure that you are not introducing any disease.
Mm-hmm.
And USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, has authorized the Seed Science Center to be the place where this disease testing will occur. So we can test for 350 different diseases that nobody else in the world can do. So we operate the world's largest seed testing laboratory.
Hmm.
We can also be the testing place for the seed-borne pathogens that carry diseases so that the world is going to be a good place where we do not have any diseases. You know, diseases don't need passport or visa to travel.
Mm-hmm.
They can travel mm-hmm. just in different kinds of products.
Yeah.
So that's what we are reputed for.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Cindy, tell us again when the movie is playing and where, just so that somebody listening can be sure to hear it.
So you can
see it.
See the movie. This is the first time it will be shown in public at Ryman Gardens. That will be on Father's Day at 6 p.m. This event is free and open to the public. We encourage people to bring their families to come out and watch. Again, that's 6 p.m. on Father's Day, June 16th. We will offer refreshments and popcorn. You need popcorn at any movie, freshly popped seeds. And so we are excited for people to come watch it.
That sounds beautiful. Thank you. And I loved your story about the flood and the seed. That's quite an image. Dr. Misra, would you like the last word?
As I mentioned during our conversation, that seeds are like people. When I think of seeds, I think of they grow in the sun, they sleep in the night, but even in the winter snow, they really are wishing what they will become the next spring. So it's just like people. We have all our dreams, and what is it that we will become? So that I find very beautiful.
So what do you think a seed would say?
The seed will say that, you know, that tell my story. And that's what we have done with this movie.
That's lovely. Thank you very much. And we're talking with Dr. Manjit Misra, director of the Seed Science Center at Iowa State University, together with Cindy Hicks, who is working in the communications and marketing for the Seed Center. And we're talking about the movie called Seeds, Diversity of Wonder, award-winning movie, Ryman Gardens, on Father's Day. Thank you so much for sharing the wonder of seeds with us.
Thank you.
That's Miles Davis with Summertime. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us. Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, is back. Thank you for coming back, Susan. And speaking of summer, tell us what's in store as we head into summer in Ames.
Great to be back here. It's hard to believe a month has passed. June, once again, is shaping up to be a very, very busy month. Municipal band concerts have started. Thursday, June 13th is City Council Night at the Band Shell, and that's the night that we have our guest soloist Simon Estes come in. That is, again, Thursday, June 13th. There's always a pre-concert at 7, and the municipal band takes the stage at 8, and those concerts last till about 9 o'clock. At Council Night at the Band Shell, your city council members and Mayor Hala will be available to hand out cookies and
to serve water.
And the city council members really enjoy getting out, talking with people while letting them enjoy the concert, having some brief conversations, handing out the cookies, and then going around with the water pitchers to refresh. With the weather that we're having lately, certainly staying hydrated is a big issue. And those concerts do continue through July. On a Thursday evening, if you're in the Band Shell Park area, make sure to show up, bring a chair, and I would suggest some bug spray, and just enjoy the music. There is schedule on our website as to who the pre-concert band will be, and then some information about the program for that evening. So again, June 13th with Simon Estes is a big night, so we expect a huge crowd. Speaking of just city news in general, we are just delighted to welcome Deb Shildroth to the city administrative team. We lost Bob Kindred after 38 years of service. Bob has retired. Those were some pretty big shoes to fill. But for many people in this area, Deb Shildroth will be a familiar name. She has worked with Story County for many decades, and we are just delighted that she is going to join the City of Ames team July 1st. So a name that many people will recognize. She'll be taking on Bob's duties, and people will see her out in the community wearing a City of Ames logo. So we are really excited and looking forward to Deb's joining us. But I think there might be a little bit of a sort of a second look to see who she's representing. But she's joining the City of Ames. So that's was good news. That vacancy was a long time coming. We knew that Bob was going to retire. And we're just excited to have somebody with a different skill set to come and help with that in that leadership role.
What do you think she's going to be really great at?
Deb has wonderful people skills. She is a connector and a networker, and she's a problem solver. So we are really excited. And those were all really good things that Bob did, too. And then she brings with her really an unusual background in social work. And so she's worked with nonprofit agencies in the community for a long time. So we're excited that she's bringing that expertise. In regards to new employees, we have a new library director who started. It's been a couple of weeks for Sheila Schofer, who took over for Lynn Carey. Again, a long tenured employee with the City of Ames who left and was replaced by somebody who brings in really great experience and a new perspective. So we welcome Sheila Schofer to the City of Ames Public Library. And there is a public reception for Sheila June 18th. So there's more information on the Ames Public Library website about that. Exciting news. Change is difficult, but we are excited by this change and looking forward to working with our new employees. I'm already getting calls about 4th of July, which seems so far away, but really isn't. And I know we usually talk about this month, but I thought I would just put in a plug for those who are making their 4th of July plans. Please remember that this is probably the fourth or fifth year that the fireworks are on July 3rd. And I know that was an adjustment, but I really enjoy 3rd of July fireworks because you can sleep in the next day, usually. Most people are off on the 4th.
Preemptive 4th of July.
And it really is a lovely way to start off your holiday. So the 4th of July fireworks will be on the 3rd, which is kind of funny to say. 3rd of July fireworks typically start around dusk. I used to say around 9:30, but I have to tell you, dusk is really closer to 10. So around close to 10 p.m., we'll expect the fireworks to go off, but I really can't give a specific time. It's really whenever it's dark enough. So they will shoot those off around Iowa State campus near Jack Trice Stadium. Again, the reminder that although you can purchase Fireworks in Ames, they are illegal to set off within the city limits, so please don't do that. That is a municipal infraction, and it could result in a fine. So let the professionals handle the fireworks on the 3rd of July. On the 4th of July, which is Thursday, we again will be hosting the Mayor and Council Community 4th of July Pancake Breakfast. And that will be from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, July 4th, and gives you just enough time then to head downtown to Main Street for the 4th of July parade at 11 a.m. So there are lots of other activities in the community over that holiday. Those are the ones that I focus my attention on. Again, pancakes from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m., followed by the parade at 11. Should be a great combination. You probably have just seen the fireworks the night before, and that's a nice way to continue your holiday celebration. Just a couple other things I wanted to remind people of. Healthy Life Center public information meetings continue to be held in June. We have some coming up June 10th, June 12th, June 13th, 17th, and 20th. Those are at various locations throughout the community, at the schools, or using the elementary schools and the high school. You can get a complete list of those meetings and ways you can get involved and more information about the project. It's a big project, and there will be a bond referendum on this project on Tuesday, September 10th. We need your vote. We need your opinion. We need to know what you think. So
come and get educated.
Come and get educated and then vote. That's how this process works. In a nutshell, six partners are going together to build a very large facility that works by having these different partners work together. We have an indoor aquatic center. We have a track. We have meeting rooms. We have adult senior daycare. So we have Heartland Senior Services, Iowa State University, DMAC, City of Ames, Story County, and Mary Greeley Medical Center combining for a facility that reaches needs that are social, physical, educational, and all centered in one building. And so the idea would be, say, somebody coming in for cardiac rehab might be able to walk and use the aquatic center or go on the track. You could walk in a water channel or you could walk on a track. You might take an adult in that you are responsible for to the senior center area, and maybe you would go work out. If you have had small children in Ames in the winter, having a two-story indoor playground seems like the best idea imaginable. Something like that would be there. If you have smaller children and you want to put them in a child watch area, you can put them there and go work out. You could all go together into the indoor aquatic center. So many opportunities for intergenerational participation. It's really kind of an amazing idea. Ideas like this don't come around very often. It is expensive. It's a $49 million facility. We have contributions and donations that are taking up $20 million of that. And the vote on Tuesday, September 10th is to the community. Do you want to pay for the $29 million deficit, the gap? Okay. And so that's the question. I would suggest everybody become more educated. We need people to be educated about this, to express their support or their concerns, and then to express their opinions on September 10th. And then the final thing is, I just want to mention, we are piloting a food composting program that will start July 1st. We're calling it Food Waste Diversion, or FWD. That looks a lot like forward. We talk about being forward thinking. Let's not waste so much food. Let's find a way to reuse it. Look for information about that on our website, cityofames.org, Food Waste Diversion.
Food composting. Very nice. Thank you, Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. In the last 15 minutes of the show, and KHOI's environmental reporter, Pat Schlarbaum, was in southeast Minnesota recently with the Raptor Resource Project, best known for the Decorah Eagles, and they were branding peregrine falcons. Pat brings you this report from there.
Peregrine falcons were lost as a nesting species from the Mississippi River to the East Coast by 1965. DDT was an insecticide that was used to kill mosquitoes. Unfortunately, once it entered the food chain, every other species was adversely affected, right to the top of that food chain, where eagles and peregrines, falcons, are located. After DDT was banned in 1973, efforts were enacted to return the peregrine falcons by releasing them in cities away from other predators like great-horned owls. The urban population of peregrines thrived, yet falcons nested historically on the rugged bluffs of northeast Iowa, and they were absent on those bluffs. So Raptor Resource Project Director Bob Anderson came to Iowa to release falcons on cliffs in 1997, and from his efforts, falcons began nesting on cliffs of the Driftless area of northeast Iowa, southeast Minnesota, and southwestern Wisconsin. Driftless gets its name from the rough topography that was not impacted by glaciers. Recently, I caught up with John Howe of the Raptor Resource Project to inspect one of the cliff nesting sites and to band young peregrine falcons. We begin this story at Great Spirit Bluff, where John Howe is showing us his home office that contains the computer with images of the nesting falcons. His home is a cabin that his grandfather and father built near the historic bluff where falcons now nest. Well, we've got a keystone species of the Endangered Species Act now nesting at Great Spirit Bluff. How would that affect your parents?
Right around the time, basically, my father and grandfather were building this log cabin and coming to this property and getting to know it better was about the time that was the decline of the peregrine falcon from use of DDT, ubiquitous use of it, getting into tissue and being sprayed on cropland and being sprayed in forested areas and getting into waterways, people's bodies, everything, DDT and its metabolites. The 50s, 60s, that time period when before me and when I was born in 1963 and when I grew up, the time my parents were here at this property, they did not know what a peregrine falcon looked like. There weren't any around here. So the neat thing about that was getting connected with a gentleman named Bob Anderson, who was a falconer and was darn set on doing everything he could to help bring the peregrine falcon back, captively breeding them, releasing them, selling them, and building a program through what he named the Raptor Resource Project to help breed and release peregrine falcons to help bring them back to the populations that they had been pre-DDT and when we almost lost them from the North American continent here. So no peregrine falcons in that time period. When my father was approached by Bob Anderson, he started that journey of learning about the peregrine falcon, something that I'd never seen before. And I remember they put a nest box. My father said, "Go ahead, I love what you're doing. Very environmentally conscious. I love what you're doing. Go ahead and put the nest box out there on the bluff if it will help out." That was in 2003. And by 2005, they were nesting there that season. And that was the first, probably there was a banding event with the Raptor Resource Project. I'm sure it was Bob and maybe Amy or somebody else rappelled down and got the falcons and banded them. But so that's been an annual thing since. So in that 2005, you know, to the present, every year that's been happening. And, you know, the story continues to be told and friends are made and the property and the beauty of the property is shared with many people, students and friends and even more importantly, the animal species that are also our friends, the peregrine falcon. And we saw a neat thing when we were out there today. Remember, we saw a noisy peregrine falcon, and that was our unbanded peregrine falcon, the male. We call him Newman. He was chasing after a bald eagle, which came soaring not too far away from us. And there went Newman in hot pursuit after that eagle. But yes, sharing this property and this space with the peregrine falcon. We see them. We enjoy them now. But that's something that at that time, you know, they had never experienced that.
So the box went in, and it was shortly thereafter that the cameras went on. When did the cameras
happen? So it would have been back in 2011, and that's when Bob Anderson and Neil Rudig teamed up. Neil was producing American Eagle through PBS Nature series. Bob was telling me about that at one of our banding events here, a picnic afterwards, just like what we're doing today. And I said, well, that's great. You're a Falconer, Bob. How'd you like to have one of those amazing cameras out at Great Spirit Bluff here looking out over Lake Onalaska and at a nesting pair of peregrine falcons? You know, what would you think about that? So that became my son's Eagle Scout project as a part of his becoming a Eagle Scout, and probably the turning point for me in going from one career to another. Because I was very involved with helping Jonathan with that project and steering it through and designing, and then put this little camera and a microphone out on 50 feet down this bluff and then 1,000 feet of cabling all the way back, powered by a 12-volt transformer. So 12 volts going 1,000 feet out, 50 feet down, powering a little color 720 lines per inch camera, and then sending that video and audio back another 1,000 feet so we could broadcast it. So that was the start.
To right here?
To right here.
Yeah.
My mother used to help. I put another camera out there. Bob said, you convinced me. You know, I want to give you this, my best pan tilt zoom camera. Yeah. You know, where do you think we should put it? And I told him where I thought we should put it. And we put that out there, and that started the progression of, you know, how can we really get better quality? Could we read the bands on those falcons with the camera instead of having to sit out there with binoculars? Mm-hmm. How can we do this inobtrusively and not bother them and see what's going on here and track them? So in 2015, we made the transition to high definition HD 1080p cameras, and that was basically the year that Bob passed away and that I took over as director of the Raft Resource Project. So
the campus went in the spring, and Bob had a heart attack in July.
Yep, I think it was July 20th.
So he got to see it.
Yep.
The culmination. And now it's part of your legacy, part of your
story.
It is.
So we're sitting here at Command Central where in about 2015, after several years of improving, we've got a pan-tilt zoom camera that we can look out over the bluff, up, down, to the sides, and way out. A very good zoom capability.
Yeah.
And then we added to that, when we could not see a lot of the detail out there, we got about as good as we could get with the cameras to look out a mile and a half, 2 miles away. We saw these amazing events happening with migrating waterfowl, pelicans, tundra swans, eagles. Eagles out on the barrier islands in the Lake Onalaska and the river, looking in the fall and winter months like ornaments on a Christmas tree. You know, it's like, what would it be like to be out there in the middle of that lake and that preserve and no humans, but to have phenomenal audio quality and a really good camera, and to be able to monitor the migration of the raptors through this area and all the waterfowl. And that's something that dream was realized last summer when we got the Mississippi River Flyway Cam going with the National Fish and Wildlife Service over in Bryce Prairie, Wisconsin.
And viewers can tune into that at your website?
Yeah, at the Raptor Resource Project website, www.raptorresource.org.
Okay, from the overlook of Great Spirit Bluff. And what's special about this view today in light of the abandoning of the peregrine falcons here at Great Spirit Bluff?
I think the basic thing is just looking out here right now. You as listeners are hearing us talk about this, but I am looking out over the edge of a bluff down approximately 600 feet at the mighty Mississippi River here and a huge lake, Lake Onalaska. And this is from our family property called, given the name of Great Spirit Bluff, in honor of the American Indian. and the connection of humans with Mother Earth and the universe. That's the big picture. But we look here, and we're looking out at this amazing river, all the life, all the fish and the waterfowl and everything that's here. And what was so amazing is the recovery story that about bringing back the peregrine falcon to this area that we lost. We lost it because of a man-made pesticide that thinned the eggshells. It wasn't just peregrine falcons, it was other raptors, it was bald eagles. As part of the Raptor Resource Project, we monitor and band and keep track of data of productivity, where the peregrine falcons are going, who's coming back. That's part of the banding processes to help us understand who's going where, what they're doing. And with a species that migrates down to South America and back each year, and finds and geolocates and follows these undulations in the earth, the riverine systems, and comes right back to the same area within a day or two each year is such an amazing thing. But we're here for the banding of the peregrine falcons here at Great Spirit Bluff. We have a thing about what we do, why we ban these birds, is it helps us understand and try to figure out the story of what's going on with the peregrine falcon in their recovery. Because right now, we don't know necessarily. We use lots of new chemicals. We've got effects that are happening that we've probably initiated on what's happening with our weather patterns, with climate change, and we're seeing breakouts of pest species like the black fly. Those changes that are happening, that's why it's important for us to do this monitoring. So this annual banding event, we're out here with the peregrine falcon that we helped right or wrong, bring them back, help show them here's where you came from, and now they are thriving. They're in most all of their historic spots that people had monitored pre-DDT, and it's a success story that I think we're going to need more of those, and we're going to need more of those kind of stories to share with the next generation of conservationists and let them know that we can make a difference, and we can one, identify when we're doing things that are harmful, and two, we can right those wrongs. And hopefully we will learn from this story and our success and meet those challenges that come to us in the future here.
And you're passing this message along generation to the next generation, and for the peregrine falcons,
long may they fly.
So you have been listening to a story about the Raptor Resource Project banding peregrine falcons. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Northminster Presbyterian Church, presenting the 2019 Vacation Bible School, Marketplace 29 AD, an opportunity for experiential learning. Children from preschool to sixth grade are invited to visit and interact with a recreated marketplace from biblical times, June 16th to the 20th, from 6 o'clock to 8 p.m. Information and registration forms are found at www.amesnpc.org.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by the 2019-2020 Performing Arts Series at Stevens Auditorium. For information on ticket packages and upcoming performances, go to center.iastate.edu.